It's time to get brutally honest.
I'd be over 100, like legit playing it as it lies.
I think you would shoot 160.
I would shoot 160.
Dude,
what are you talking about, 160?
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Well, generally speaking, we love having Steph around, but I think we may have dodged a bullet today.
Yes.
Because she's off today, and if she was in here, she would be floating around on cloud nine because of a list that you found over the weekend, Noodles.
No, I didn't find it. It was sent to me by our producer.
Steph found it.
She found it.
And wow.
We actually may have to get... I think she's on her way to the studio. I don't know. But we may have to get her to explain how she found it or whatever because I was away Saturday. She emailed it to me and said, check this out. I couldn't open the link or whatever. So when I opened it on the plane back yesterday, I saw her being a hero. And
well, explain the list.
Okay.
I know I'm throwing this at you.
Yeah,
but I'll explain it.
Well,
we don't need to go down at all.
But
we don't need to break it down.
Yeah. Like
it's the top 15 hot wives.
No, retired. Here's what it says. 15 retired NHL stars that have smoking hot wives. So the first thing that is false is I was never an NHL star, so I'm already being lumped into that. And then, yeah, like Steph does all right, but I think I do all right, too.
You guys are both top 15.
Well, I'm a solid six.
I think so, yeah.
A six.
But, Steph, man, I can only imagine how this is going to play out. Like, where she's going to take this, the Facebook status.
She wants to parlay it into some sort of... And I don't even know...
I would just copy the whole thing and put it in a frame, and it's on the living room. Why not?
Why not?
I thought maybe they could find a better picture. They got a picture of all of us.
I know, like Mullen's in there.
Me, you,
yeah.
I think Ray's in there.
It's
yeah.
a really strange pick, but Steph is like seventh on the list, so
yes.
Good for her. And
but it's
that's a big day.
The comment is, for me, an obscure backup goaltender for much of his career.
Although, like, pretty George much. Paros is on there.
Yeah, Paros. But
there's a bunch of guys that kind of just kicked around. You probably had a longer career than the majority of them.
Yeah, I mean, Eric Nystrom is on there. But, I mean, there's Roenick, there's Robitaille, Modano. There's
yeah.
Some big names.
A couple
on
Hall of Famers in there. Okay.
A couple Hall of Famers kicking it. Matz is in there. Matt Sundin.
Yeah, it's a good list to be on.
He's at 12.
I think
Steph made it at 7.
That's the amazing thing is Steph, like, I was going through 15, 14, 13. I'm like, I love Steph.
Yeah,
but
some pretty big names in there. Like
number seven.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's ranking this list?
Well, that's the thing. The guy, you know, it's just some guy from the Sportster.
I was on a Sportster list as well.
You were? How did yours work out?
I wasn't going to bring that up.
We don't even need to discuss what the list was.
You can probably... What
is, not flattering? Is that what you're suggesting?
It's the opposite of their list.
Okay, so if we're talking hottest wives of ex-players.
15 players who got fat after playing hockey.
Where were you on that list?
I don't know.
Were you a top five pick?
I think.
No.
You broke into the top five?
I don't think so. I think just because of how popular you are now.
Who else was on the list?
Tony Amonte.
Keith Tkachuk had to be on that list.
He's
drafted first overall.
Remember Keith at the draft last year? He was roaming around because Matthew was going to be a top 10 pick.
Well, Keith is an awesome guy.
Yeah, he seems like a great guy. Well, anyway.
So congrats.
Do you want me to? I just found the list.
Should we break it down?
Well, do you want to? We could break down both lists and go up. I mean, there's some
just
big.
Just go through the list.
Okay, go through the players.
Okay, so here's the line. It says top 15 NHLers who got fat after they retired.
This is really fun.
15 Brett Hull.
Okay.
14 Mike Marcin.
Who's that?
I don't know. He played in.
Who
Washington
cares?
Capitals.
Just keep going.
13 Adam Deadmarsh. Yeah, he's put a few lbs on. Tony Amonte's number 12. Passy Nerminen, our friend from YouTube.
Passy from Team Finland.
Yes. Stan Jonathan. Okay, like that's a vet. You're number nine, Jeff O'Neill.
That's not bad.
That's all right.
Number nine, that's fine.
And it, see, the thing is it's very flattering. The comments was a star player in junior, scoring a good
five. That's enough. That's enough.
Number eight is Big E.
Eric Lindros. Wow.
Kevin Stevens, number seven.
All right, who's number one? Just go right to number one.
Right down to number one.
It's got to be Keith.
Yeah.
Is it Keith?
It's Keith Tkachuk.
Keith is number one. Okay. Yeah. And we're big fans, and maybe we'll see him in Chicago later in the week because we're going down there.
Huge fans of Keith Tkachuk.
All right. Well, shout out to anybody on a list.
Exactly.
Including an expansion list in the NHL, I guess.
So are you disappointed?
Yeah. It was horrible. It was a buildup. We kept talking about this, and we are partially to blame.
Right.
We're part of the media. We're a part of the hype machine. But I remember bringing this up. Remember when Pooley was on a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
And I remember saying, what if nothing happens?
Right.
What if there's all this chatter that GMs would rather lose a guy for free, or there's got to be maneuvering? And I remember Pooley saying, that's not going to happen because it can't happen. There's too many moving parts. Now, more moving parts can still happen. Now that Vegas has exclusivity over the deal, they can work out trades with different teams. Technically, they could leverage team offers against other team offers. But I was saying at that point, and I didn't believe it was going to happen, but at that point I threw it out there. Like, what if it's just kind of underwhelming leading up to the trade freeze?
It was less than that.
Let's be honest. The Drouin trade was a big deal.
Big deal.
Other than that, Mike Smith going to Calgary, they got their number one guy. We'll talk about that throughout the afternoon.
Yeah.
But beyond that, nothing. No Vatanen, no Dumba, no Manson.
And this was right in your wheelhouse. You always said you got to create some avenues or different ways to create excitement for different fan bases.
But I feel like...
And Montreal and Calgary, the only two with any excitement right now.
I feel like a lot of this was the league's fault because they asked them to keep all the trades under wraps until Wednesday.
But what if trades don't happen? What if the only trades are teams trading with Vegas to keep their players? And the more we hear about it, the more likely that becomes. Take Anaheim, for instance.
Right.
They didn't protect Josh Manson or Sammy Vatanen.
Yeah.
It sounds as if they have deals out for both of them. Right. So now Anaheim's not going to make a deal.
No, but
and for 6 months, everyone's like, well, they're going to lose someone. They got to trade someone. Now it looks like they're not going to deal anybody.
Well, Vegas may just say, I mean, they may get a first rounder out. I think Vegas is going to come out smelling pretty on this because they're going to get probably a first rounder from Anaheim to not touch these guys, plus grab a player off that list. You have to. You actually have to take a player. But I floated this to you, Brian, in a text. If I'm the Toronto Maple Leafs, I'll bring it home. If I'm the Toronto Maple Leafs and I see a Matthew Dumba on that list, I call George McPhee and say, are you going to grab him? And what's the deal from Minnesota to not grab him? Because I'll beat it. That's where, to me, that the problem is we don't know this and we won't know what happened until Wednesday.
Exactly. But that's what I'm saying is based on Vegas and their statement that came out over the weekend.
Right.
Sounded very diplomatic, very team-friendly, almost like they don't want to ruffle the feathers. They're almost approaching all of these players that are available to them the same way teams approach offer sheets.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not going to grease you. So it was almost like they said, listen, I'm going to give you every opportunity to keep your players.
Right.
Which I don't quite understand why you would be that diplomatic. If I'm George McPhee, I'm saying, listen,
I'm taking your player.
Or I'm going to leverage. What, like, let's say Anaheim's like, we'll give you a first for Manson to not take him. I'd say, okay, I'm calling Lou Lamoriello right now, see if he'll give me two.
And I think that's what he's doing.
But I would hope that happens.
He has
But if it comes out, though, I'm not sure, Noodles. I'm really not sure.
Really?
I'm really not certain that George McPhee wants to make an impact this early, pissing off teams throughout the league.
Yeah.
That was kind of the way I read that statement. Almost, I'm going to give you an opportunity. We don't want to take your guys. We understand it's sensitive.
You can negotiate your list.
Right.
That's what he said. But...
but why would you do that? Like, I hope that doesn't happen.
I would take anything more. If you're offering me a first, somebody else, give me a prospect and a first.
Right.
Anything.
Give me first and a seventh,
and
I'll take it.
But that's what he has to... like, he's exactly to your point. Okay, to not take Josh Manson, I'm getting a first from Anaheim. Okay,
but he's worth way more than that.
But that's what I'm saying. Lou Lamoriello may go, I'll give you a first and Kapanen. Or I don't want to throw names out, but
that makes sense, though. That's probably what we're talking about.
But that's... And then he's got to go back to Bob Murray and say, I've got a deal on the table for a real solid prospect and a high pick. Where are you at? Because if he's not doing that, shame on him. Shame on
right,
him.
But again, it sounds as if deals were made beforehand. So almost like Anaheim worked this deal out 2 weeks ago.
Right, right.
Because if Vegas wasn't going to give them the benefit of the doubt and allow them to dig themselves out of the hole, the Ducks would have traded these guys before everything happened.
Correct.
Or would have demanded that BXA waive.
Right.
You know, or whatever it is. Or done something differently to avoid the situation that they're currently in.
Yep.
Now, this is all just reports at this point. No one is confirming it. So it could turn out that's exactly what's going to happen.
Crazy bidding wars.
Crazy bidding wars. I would hope so. And if I'm the league, I would be wanting that. That's mm-hmm. interesting. Who Absolutely. Wants to walk away with all these guys just staying on the same team and Vegas just rakes in a bunch of second and third round picks over the next 3 years?
Okay, so
that's boring.
Here's another thing. If you're Lou Lamoriello, what do you pay for Vegas to take Joffrey Lupul's contract off your books?
Nothing.
No, nothing?
Not worth it. You can bury that. You can own it. They just did it a year. Lupul's not showing up at camp this year saying I'm playing.
I understand that.
He's done.
But I just, like, to me, that's, Vegas has to get to the floor. It's established that it's 75. I think what's the floor was 40, whatever.
44.3 or something like that. 43.8.
They've got to take live contracts and live money. That could be a situation as well. I don't know. I mean, you're right. The Leafs aren't in dire straits as far as cap hell, and they don't have to pay anybody this summer. As far as Matthews, I mean, Nylander will talk about that. But it just, I was thinking about that. Like, if I'm George McPhee, I would load up on goalies. Like, I would grab as many goalies as possible because there's a marketplace for goalies right now. Like, even backups. There's a lot of different scenarios that have to happen, and teams need to fill that. If you end up, you're looking at certain teams. Like, if I'm Detroit or if I'm Vegas, I grab Peter Mrazek for sure. I think
was shocked that they protected Jimmy Howard over him.
I think Detroit's not happy with their goaltending, period.
Right, but wouldn't you keep the younger guy?
Kind of had an off year, and he might be young and a little bit stupid, but
Jimmy Howard, what the hell is he?
Yeah.
I mean,
I agree, but I think Detroit's just saying, I'm throwing it out there, see what happens. I would grab Mrazek, but then if you don't believe that he's going to be your guy, like if Fleury's going to be your guy, maybe it's Fleury and Mrazek, or it's Grubauer out of Washington. Like, there are some really good goalies available. They may not be A-listers outside of Fleury, but there's some guys that I think Mrazek has upside to be a pretty darn good goalie. But that's what I'm, because now you've got bargaining pieces to turn them over.
Right, it's the one position they should have that should be pretty solid.
Should be. But again, Brian and I were talking about if you're Pittsburgh, like, or if you're Vegas and you decide to grab Mrazek and you don't go after Fleury, you go after Brian Rust, Pittsburgh could be screwed for Fleury's cap.
Yeah, it sounds like Fleury's either going to Vegas or he's staying in Pitt. Now, right. that could change, and maybe the brass down there in Pittsburgh talks him out of that, and they decide to go somewhere. But by all accounts, Calgary would have shown some intrigue, but it sounds like he wasn't willing to go to Calgary.
So they made their move
and went for Mike Smith.
Yeah, he didn't wave to go to Calgary.
But here's another thing. I wouldn't. Why would you want Marc-Andre Fleury if he's going to steal you some points over the next 2 years? Like, if I'm Vegas, and it sure sounds like George McPhee is expressing this openly, we want to build through the draft, and we don't expect to be any good over the next couple of years. So why would you want Marc-Andre Fleury, who's a legit top 10 or 12 goalie in the league, and will, over the course of a year, steal you some points?
Right.
I don't know why I would want him and then a bunch of players that are not very good. So I would be looking at it the opposite way.
I agree,
saying,
man. Like, why do you want to have a guy that could possibly stand on his head and get you some points you don't need? It's just like, just accept it. I know you probably made promises to your owner that you could probably be good right away. I just don't see it happening.
It's not going to happen.
The scary part, though, is if these side deals weren't taken, you'd probably have a decent top four. Like, a decent.
Right.
Because you would end up grabbing a Vatanen.
Mm-hmm.
You'd end up...
Maybe probably a Dumba,
Mathot. Like, you would have a four that looks, like, pretty good. Like, a lot of other teams that would be pretty
happy. And with Fleury and
Nett,
all of a sudden, you're not bad.
But that's,
for sure.
But that's the scary part is he... If McPhee is saying that...
Sorry, James. That's kind of what I wish would have happened. All this side deal stuff and all this non... I just wish they could put together a good team and see what happened, but I don't see it happening.
No,
but see,
I don't think they want to grab that.
Neil from Nashville. Like, there's some guys that, and then you could sign a few unrestricted free agents.
Right.
You know, there was, I think it was our insiders that were reporting that, you know, Vegas had talked to Chris Russell and guys like that. Like, all of a sudden, you end up being probably a
potentially
team you don't
an average
be.
Team.
But that's the thing.
And
you
that's
don't
the
want
problem.
To be that.
If I'm Vegas and I'm starting from scratch, if you're thinking long term, 4 or 5 years
you
down the road,
that.
And trying to be a cup contending team, what is average going to do for you? You want to load up on younger players and prospects
think it's,
and picks.
It's the market you're going into, and everyone's excited about it. And then
here's another thing that I'd throw out at you. What if you can take a second tier team, for example? Because if you don't grab Manson or Vatanen, then you're going to get a high pick from Nash or from Anaheim. I would argue that they could actually come up with a lesser team. A team that still doesn't embarrass themselves, but be really flush with picks and prospects off of some of these moves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think Vegas should be striving for, is to not have an embarrassing team, still compete, but you're not going to win. But you're going to have 5 or 6 first-rounders, either from either this year or next year.
Like, well, you mentioned a first in Kapanen. That would be very appealing if I'm George McPhee. I'm looking at the 17th overall pick this year for the Leafs, and Kasperi Kapanen, who I think is a legit NHL player, where he ends up in the lineup is yet to be determined, but 20 years old, can skate like the wind, fits into the new mold of hockey in this league.
Yeah.
For me, that would be worth a lot. And I don't know what the Leafs' plans are, nobody does, but I think that would make sense if you're the Leafs to kick tires on throwing that package together. If you feel like you can get Manson, Vatanen, Dumba, one of those players.
Absolutely.
Like, those guys are legit top four NHL defensemen. They're not superstars necessarily, but they're upgrades on like a Connor Carrick.
Absolutely.
Let's say you bring in Dumba and he's on your second pairing. That pushes Carrick to the third pairing. All of a sudden, you've got a decent defense core.
You're looking nice.
You're looking okay.
Real nice.
And I know, you know, people in this market are still kind of, they think the way they've been taught to think, where you hold on to the kids, you overvalue your kids, because for 10 years the team didn't do that.
Right.
They got rid of them too quickly. They moved on from them too quickly. That's why you're seeing the reaction from some Leaf fans who are freaking out that Kirby Reichel and Brendan Leipsic were both options, I guess, for Vegas, and they decided to protect Matt Martin.
Right.
Because they look at the stats and they're like, they're young, they put up numbers in the American Hockey League. Why wouldn't you want to keep those guys?
Yeah.
The Leafs clearly don't look at them the same way that Leaf fans do when they simply look at their hockey DB page.
And that's the thing that I would caution, is I've played in the minors, and I've played in the minors with a lot of real good players.
You've also been in management and organization and saw young guys that score their 22 goals a year in the AHL, and it's like, wow, this guy's a...
There's no guarantee that the points in the minors translate to the National Hockey League. So... careful with that. That's the only thing I'll say, is because I'll throw some names at you. Kip Miller. I don't know. You remember the Miller family? Now, Kip Miller is...
Wasn't he with the Islanders organization?
Yes. We had him with the Islanders. I played with him in the minors.
He scored a million points in the minors.
Could be the greatest minor league player I've ever seen in my life. Him and a guy named Nicholas Anderson. Nicholas Anderson was in the Islanders organization. These two dominated at lower levels. Dominated. And once it got to the National Hockey League, it didn't translate. The minors are full of really good players that are missing one or two things from their game. Maybe it's skating. Maybe it's smarts. Maybe it's defensive awareness. Now, some of that stuff can be coached up. Some of that stuff is just, you can't teach somebody to be smart.
Well, Leaf fans got to remember, they're only going to lose one.
Right.
And they may not even lose...
right.
Either one of them. Maybe they take Marchenko or Marinson. Who knows?
But when I look at minor league guys, it's... Now, I think Leipzig has a lot of talent. People always want to compare him. To me, Leipzig is not Mitch Marner.
He's not even close.
He's not. But
neither of those guys are
neither.
Even close.
But that's the point, is when you look at people's production at smaller... at other leagues, everyone thinks that's going to translate to the NHL.
No.
Let's not forget, a lot of real good... players that were either stars in junior or stars in the minors ended up depth players in the NHL.
Well, and the truth is, when you're 22, 23 years old, which is what Leipzig is and Kirby Reichel, that's like the equivalent in the American Hockey League to an overager in junior. Yeah. Overagers and junior, they're 19, 20. They're older than the kids just coming in. And generally speaking, they get great opportunities and they put up big numbers.
Yeah.
Very rarely does the overager actually make it to the NHL. Just because the overager scored 45 goals in his fifth year of junior.
Against 16-year-olds.
Against 16-year-olds doesn't mean it translates.
Yeah.
The scout will take the 16-year-old every day of the week because of his trajectory.
Right.
And that's the way I'm sure the Leafs are looking at Leipzig and Reichel, and if they were that good and that prepared to come up, they would have found a way onto the team, and I just don't think the Leafs look at them that way.
Well,
and listen, if they do, they might work out a deal with Vegas.
Right.
Take Marinson. Don't take one of these two kids. Here's a third-round pick and or whatever they might value him at.
Let's not forget, we've talked about the Leafs. The top six, unless you're making a trade, is it pretty much set in stone for you, for the Leafs?
Their forwards?
Yes.
Absolutely.
So
I would argue the top nine.
Okay,
like maybe Hyman can move in and out. That's the guy.
But
you're looking at JVR, Bozak, Marner intact, Matthews, Nylander, Brown intact, Kadri, Komarov intact.
Okay,
that's so, eight of your top nine.
Brown and Hyman are interchangeable, and who knows what happens. After
I don't
that.
Think Brown is interchangeable. Yeah. I think he's legit top nine. He scored 20 goals.
Oh yeah, but I don't know if he plays on Austin Matthews' line.
No, but he can move in and out. Around, but he's but a top nine top forward.
But you're right; they're pretty much locked in as far as up front.
So I was thinking about that last night when I saw people upset about Leipzig and that guys like that who get put points up in the minors have to play a top six or a top nine role for sure. Even to have the opportunity to get points.
Well, and not to mention, you know who else they have to hop over? Kasperi Kapanen, who they're not better than.
Right.
He's the best. He was the best player on the Marlies. Soshnikov, Levo.
Right.
Like, there's three kids right there who the Leafs clearly value more than Leipzig and Kirby Reichel. And they're all the same age. Leipzig's going to be 23. Reichel is 23.
Right.
These are not 19-year-olds that you're letting up on. These are guys who have been in the American Hockey League for like 3 years.
Yeah.
Good players. I'm sure they're dying to get picked up.
Absolutely.
If I was Kirby Reichel, I'd be like, please take me so I can play in the NHL.
Yes.
Yeah.
But in Toronto, he can't find a spot.
And it's a good problem to have if you are the Toronto Maple Leafs. That's the truth.
Absolutely.
It's not
think
a good
about
problem
where they were 2-3 years ago. It was the complete opposite. Sean Devaney's going to join us. We talk about, you know, comparing and contrasting the NHL to the NBA. Lots of hype in the NHL, but nothing ends up happening.
Mm-hmm.
The NBA, it's nonstop. I mean, the first pick got flipped over the weekend. Paul George has gone to Indiana and said, I'm out of here after next year, so you might want to trade me. So he's going to get dealt.
I wonder where he's going to go.
You think he'll end up in Cleveland?
Yeah.
He's going to end up with the Lakers after this upcoming season. He's from L.A. It sounds like he's basically told them, I'm going to L.A. in a year. So we'll catch up with Sean, get his take on that. What does this mean for Kyle Lowry? Now that Philly's got their point guard, they're going to take Markelle Fultz first overall. And what does it mean for the Raptors?
Yeah.
Because Cleveland's still going to be a beast. Boston is just going to keep getting better. If this process continues in Philly, where these kids that they have actually develop, they're going to be potentially in beast mode in 2 or 3 years. The Raptors are just kind of hovering. Like, they're a good team, not a great team. We'll see what Sean has to say about that. We'll get to it in about 5 minutes. Ryan texting in, asking if Kyle Lowry wants to win, his best shot is in Toronto, right? I mean, Cleveland and Golden State don't want him. Where else is there to go? Well, San Antonio's a spot. If Chris Paul leaves the Clippers, maybe the Clippers would be a spot. Doesn't seem like his hometown of Philly is going to be waiting for him, though, now that they've made this deal over the weekend and they're going to draft Markelle Fultz, point guard out of Washington, and they're not ready to take that step anyway, so I don't think they would invest in Kyle. I don't think it's about what's best for Kyle Lowry, though. It's about what's best for the Raptors. Short term, long term, and the more I think about it, the more I feel like they've got to go the opposite way. They can't bring back the same cast of characters and expect anything to change.
Yeah.
But my sense is that's exactly what's going to happen. Kyle will get his contract. He'll stay here with the Raptors. They'll win their 47, 48, 50 games.
That's the same that would happen if they brought back a different cast of characters. So what is the difference anyway?
Well, the option is to blow it up and do what Philly's done the past 4 years. That's what I think has to happen.
I don't think that that's in their plans.
I don't think it is either. I think they would be fearful it would lose a lot of fans, lose a lot of money. Even though they're all under the same bubble, I think they look at the Maple Leafs and say, if this Leaf team takes off and we're the worst team in the league, Right. The Raptors brand will take a massive hit in Toronto, and I understand the gamble. And it was tough. It's been 4 years in Philly where they have been absolutely abysmal.
Nick's there,
and he would be probably the first to tell you, maybe off the record. I mean, they've been a laughingstock for a long time. But with this deal, two first overall picks in a row, Ben Simmons, Markel Fultz, Joel Embiid. They got some good players there all of a sudden, and you look at what they could be 2, 3, 4 years down the road. That's something that I think a lot of teams would envy, including here in Toronto. Sean Devaney from the Sporting News will chime in on that and where Paul George could end up before the end of the month. We'll get to that in 2 minutes. Darren Dreger, our hockey insider, will join us in studio at 5 p.m. Steve Phillips coming up later in the afternoon. The Jays dropping 2 of 3 over the weekend. Back in action tonight, Ed Harris on the mound, also known as Marco Estrada.
Bartle.
He might need to mix in some Crisco tonight because his past three outings.
Vagisil.
Bloodbath. I got faith in him that he'll break out, but the more and more you watch this Blue Jay team, the less likely it feels that they're going to break out as a team. Right. They're just a very mediocre team. I mean, you drop 2 of 3 against a bad White Sox team at home when you're going on the road for, I believe, 7 through Texas, who you're competing with now for a wild card spot. Kansas City's been hot. You're in Kansas City as well. They're starting to hum along. It's just one of those years, man. You watch them and you're like, what am I supposed to really be optimistic about other than the standings in the second wild card spot? They're 2 games out.
When it's all said and done, do you think they make it?
As of today, no.
No?
No. I don't. I think they're too old. They look too old. They're too injured. You know, Travis, I think he's probably done for the year. If he returns, who knows what you're getting. Sanchez, they're hopefully can return in the next month, but I'm not sure if he can get his season back on track. It's been such a disaster for him and the blister and the fingertip issues. They're just a team that their pitching isn't very good. Their starting pitching's been way too inconsistent. Now they can't hit.
That was supposed to be their strength.
Right. Now, injuries have factored into that.
Correct.
Clearly. And Hap had a pretty good outing again over the weekend, so maybe he's starting to circle back into form. But you look at their bats, man. In April, they were one of the worst batting teams in baseball. And then in May, they bounced back almost remarkably the amount of production they put up. And now they're slowing down again.
Right.
Now they can't hit. So they've just been way too inconsistent, too injury-riddled.
They've just gotten to the point where it's not one thing, it's the other.
Yeah. That's it. They can't. There's no cohesion. Not many times this year have you looked at it and said pitching, hitting, defense. Wow, it's all kind of humming along, and they look like a playoff team. But as I said, that second wild card spot, they're 2 out.
It's wide open.
There's a bunch of teams that have been very mediocre, including Texas, Kansas City. The Yankees just went out west and got smoked. It feels like Boston might start plugging away here and maybe take off in the American League East, which is fine. I mean, if the Jays aren't going to win the division, which doesn't seem likely, to stay within striking distance of one of the two wildcard spots, and they still are. You know, but that's the only optimism I can really find, is that they're 2 games out.
Mm-hmm.
You can't look at the way they're playing and say, wow, here we go. It's right around the corner from a breakout performance.
What's weird for me when I watch the games, I'll turn them on two innings in, and it's 6-9. They're getting smoked, or they're up. But the other day I turned it on, I'd gotten there late. They're up 7-3. Or I watched it, and then they ended up having.
They don't exactly like 7. The nail biter, do they?
It's one or the other.
Look at the weekend. They lost 11-4 on Friday.
Yeah.
Won 7-3 yesterday.
7-3 yesterday. Saturday they got beat up pretty bad too.
Yeah.
You're right. I mean, rarely are they sitting there, 3-3 going into the ninth.
There's time. I get home from this show and just turn it around.
And they're done.
It's 6-0.
Right.
You're like, what's going on?
That happened on Friday night.
Yeah.
Joe Biagini couldn't get out of the second inning.
It was 4-0 by the time I got home.
Same. I got home. I flipped it on. I was ready to barbecue. I'm like, it's over. They're done.
Yeah.
And their offense has been so bad, there was no reason to think they were just going to break out all of a sudden and storm back.
Yeah, it isn't. There's no nail biters.
No, man. It's been a very kind of bland season for them.
Yeah.
And same thing. I mean, the U.S. Open, we'll get to that later in the afternoon. I'll let you speak on it, though. But very forgettable U.S. Open.
It was like the one guy that could have moved the needle was Ricky Fowler.
Yeah.
And it never happened. It just, Justin Thomas, but it's like, it was impressive to watch Koepka, the way he drove the ball, the shot-making ability, the ball striking, but to just kind of blow everyone away, and the rest of the field, the leaderboard, you're like, is that really? The only thing fun was watching the guy who said the wrong girlfriend.
Well, that was Joe Buck. I think Joe Buck hates doing golf, man. I think he hates it. It just, it doesn't feel right on Fox.
Yeah.
It's been kind of a disaster over the past couple of years, but...
Hey.
It has. I mean, we'll play that audio later in the afternoon.
Yeah, we got to get to that.
We got Sean Devaney on the line from the Sporting News. A lot going on in the NBA right now. How you doing, Sean?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
We're doing pretty well. We were talking earlier about Kyle Lowry and his status. Now that the Sixers have moved up, they're going to take Markelle Fultz out of Washington, so there's their point guard. We know Cleveland more than likely won't find a spot for him. Why would they? They're not going to pay him if they did. Golden State, the same thing. So where do his options currently lie? When you look at Lowry and his situation going into the summer, how do you see it playing out?
You know, I think he winds up staying in Toronto. I never really thought that Philadelphia was going to be that serious of a pursuer of Kyle Lowry. I think that in the end, he winds up sticking around in Toronto. You know, he'll poke around and see what's out there, and as he should. But I think that staying in Toronto is going to be his best option, and I'm pretty sure that's where he'll wind up.
So if that's the case, he's coming back. DeRozan, you presume, will still be here. You would look at some other options that they could bring back, maybe Ibaka, maybe Tucker. But if it's the same cast of characters that they've had for 3 or 4 years, where they've had very successful regular seasons, they've won a round or two in the playoffs, but then eventually they run into Cleveland and get smoked. And really, their playoff history, even without playing Cleveland, has not been overly impressive. They go to 6 or 7 against mediocre teams every single round. How do you feel about that plan for Masai Ujiri, short-term and long-term for the Raptors?
Well, you know, short-term, I think it's what you have to do. You know, I mean, I think that this team, you know, if you're going to sort of maximize what you can get out of this group, then I think that's sort of where you are and what you have to stick with. And you know, hope that either you get some development from within, that there's some good chemistry there that develops with the new guys, you know, things like that. And then, you know, frankly, you're just hoping that for some reason Cleveland takes a step back, you know, whether it's infighting or an injury or you know, if they wind up making a trade that doesn't work out. Then some of that is in Cleveland's hands. So you know, as long as that's the case, I think that the Raptors certainly aren't in a place where they can afford to take a step backwards. But moving forward is going to depend more on Cleveland than it does on Toronto.
Do you agree with Twitter, where everybody on Twitter is saying that if Paul George leaves Indiana, it's a slam dunk, he ends up in Cleveland?
No, I don't think so. You know, I think there are going to be other teams that get involved, and I think that the more that other teams do get involved, the more that the Lakers' ears are going to perk up, and they know he wants to wind up there. They don't want to give up anything for him if they could just sign him as a free agent next year, but they also don't want to take the chance that, say, a team like Houston could swoop in and bring him to Texas, and players like playing in Houston. They've had a pretty good line of success in terms of getting players there and keeping them there. I think if you get into that situation, then the Lakers are going to kind of sit back and say, well, wait, you know, this is the guy we want. Would we give up D'Angelo Russell and a future pick for him? And that's when you start talking about, that's when you can finally, if you're the Pacers, maybe get something in return. So I think what we're seeing a lot now is some groundwork being laid to where the Pacers may finally be able to get some sort of market for Paul George, even though, it's going to be a much more limited market than if all this stuff wasn't out there.
With Sean Devaney, NBA writer for the Sporting News, I think Indiana, you're probably disappointed that Paul George has come to you and said he's going to leave after next season, or more than likely going to leave after next season, just because I'm sure they'd want to keep him. He's a primary piece, a very good player. But at the same time, at least he's hooking you up and giving you a year to work out a deal. I mean, how do you think Indiana has handled that?
Yes and no. I mean, I think it works both ways. The fact is, he's already told them that. You know, they knew this months ago. And what they should have done is done something at the trade deadline when they had some knowledge at that point that he wasn't going to want to stick around. And as long as they knew that was the case, that was the time to strike. That was the time where you could have gotten a much better package than whatever they're going to get now. So the Pacers made a mistake in that regard. Now, where Paul George wound up hurting them is that, you know, all this stuff leaked out at this point. So now you know that he wants to leave, and you know that he probably wants to sign with the Lakers. And now, if you're the Pacers, you've got a really limited market. So yes, you know, I agree that Paul George put them in a position where they could get something for him. But they would probably rather this did not leak and did not get out the way that it did, because now their hands are really tied. But again, part of that's their own fault. They should have known this back in February.
If you're going to hook a team up, the idea of hooking a team up is keeping quiet.
Well, yeah. Ideally, but let's not forget what happened in Toronto. Remember Chris Bosh before he left for Miami? Colangelo was trying to get an answer out of him. He wouldn't give him an answer.
Right.
Now, he may have had an idea that Bosh was going to leave, and clearly he did end up leaving. But from my standpoint, at least George has said, I'm out. You know, okay, it leaked, but don't sit there and wait until this trade deadline. All of a sudden, you're on pace for more wins than you thought.
That's a more garbage move by not telling anybody anything, and then you're screwing everybody.
And that's what happened. Bosh left, and the Raptors didn't get anything.
Yeah, no, and I don't disagree with that. And you know, at least the Pacers have the opportunity to try to create some sort of market for them before they finally are forced to make a deal, and they don't have to lose them for nothing.
If he ends up in L.A. as a free agent next year or via trade, how would that affect LeBron James and the Lakers coming together in 2018?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's certainly the distant speculation. You know, I LeBron's going to continue to do what he's been doing, and that's short-term contracts. And, you know, I'll tell you that I didn't think he was going to leave Cleveland in 2010. I didn't think he was going to leave Miami in 2014. So I'm not very good at predicting what LeBron's going to do. But, you know, I think that in the end, you know, I think that he feels that he has done what he set out to do in Cleveland. He brought them a championship. And so if he wants to leave, if he has a quality of life in mind that he wants to go to California and he's got a house there, he wants to make that more of a permanent thing, then I think there's a real chance that could happen. I still don't see him leaving Cleveland, but again, my track record hasn't been great on that prediction on what LeBron's going to do.
Thank you, Sean. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Sean Devaney from the Sporting News.
Don't you kind of get a sense that the Lakers might be the next super team? It's like everybody wants to go back to the Lake or go to the Lakers and kind of turn that into the next. I mean, that's just by the talk on Twitter. It's like everybody's connected to the Lakers.
But this has happened before. Remember, DeMar DeRozan was connected to him a year ago, right? And he said no. Like, they better get this draft pick right. If it's Lonzo Ball, he better show something his rookie year, like he's legit and he's going to break through. And
did you read Lonzo's Players Tribune? I read it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because he calls his dad like the loudest guy in the gym. He defends him because he says it's just an interesting article from his perspective.
Like that's the way he is.
He's like, this guy drove me. He made sure that I was a man right from day one. It sounds like he was a pretty aggressive father as far as in his face, but mm-hmm. but he doesn't make apologies for it. And it was just an interesting article. I wanted to read it right away because I was wondering, like, if he takes a shot at his dad or, you know,
more. No, he's been very supportive. I mean, it's been a two-way street, right? And we'll see where that takes
the Ball family.
Well,
this guy better be pretty good. Like, that's the thing.
I think he's going to be pretty good. Like, by all accounts, this kid, he's a special talent. If he ends up in L.A. and they end up with Paul George, LeBron goes there, he's going to have every opportunity to be a pretty good Laker. Darren Dreger will join us in studio, our hockey insider, to kick off the 5 p.m. hour. This is Overdrive on the TSN Go app. All right, Dreg's in studio to kick off the hour. Get back into the U.S. Open as well. Let you hear the audio of Joe Buck causing a bit of a steam. We'll let you hear that. We'll break it down in the next hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050.